This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
There's many ways where it doesn't even feel like the prosecution is so much interested in getting to the guilty verdict. It's more so, we got to cover up this. We got to cover up this. We can't give you the right tools to even like participate in the fight. So we're going to change the rules this way and that. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make a lot of sense at all, right? The way that it's being played out. How is, was Richard Allen in the courtroom that day?
He was.
I'm sure quiet sitting there, but what was his demeanor? What was he looking like? We only saw very short clips of him walking in.
I thought he looked better.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I thought he put on some weight. I was sitting behind his wife a couple rows, and, you know, I mean, he was making solid eye contact with her, you know, like it seemed to be some kind of like, you know, nonverbal communication between husband and wife.
Yeah.
It was, you know, whereas, which was a big improvement, you know, from the times I'd seen him before, he looked like a zombie.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, there were times when he'd be looking up at the vast ceiling and kind of like staring off into space and just, you know, I mean, so I think he floats in and out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but in terms of like how I've seen him in the past, I would say that there's been improvements in terms of his mental health. You know, but that's just me observing.
Yeah,
you know, sure. But he looked healthier, both physically and mentally, to me.
Okay. Where does this go with the lost tapes and the lost, not even lost, just never keeping a record of who they interviewed in that time window? Because that seems to be kind of a big thing. And then just to take their word of, yeah, we lost it. We don't know who we interviewed, but it doesn't matter. It would be nothing to exonerate. How would you know if you don't even know right. Who you interviewed?
In the first days, the most critical days of the,
yes.
You know, the investigation. You know, I mean, they have TV shows, the first 48. Yeah, it's like, exactly. Those are like, you know, the critical days and it's all overridden. And ultimately they get on the stand and they had Mullen, the state put Mullen on again. And, you know, he tells the story. He's like, look, it's, and we're talking about a DVR, which is all, you know, a digital video yeah. recorder that had 6 terabytes of memory. And the story that he tells is that somehow a setting got changed in order to have the thing running in the 3 different rooms. I believe he said that it records 3 interview rooms. And so for 3 days, this thing's running, 3 full days. And that somehow that overrides all of those 3 days because it goes through all the memory and then starts overriding it. And when they finally discovered that this has occurred. Now, I had somebody come on who's a security expert and tell me on one of my lives, he's like, look, I could just tell you a 1 terabyte DVR is capable of recording that many rooms, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 30 days before it overrides.
Yeah.
So when you do that math, so with 6 terabytes, we're talking that should have been able to record 6 months.
I'm like, where was
this guy
yeah.
testify for the defense? Because yeah. they provided no proof. They
yeah.
provided no proof when this, that it actually occurred. It's just a story that they're telling. You know, there's some story about them getting Chinese software. There's no proof that they bought it. There's no proof of what they tried to do with it. None of that was put on. At the end of the day, though, what she is going to say is that they provided you with narrative summaries of the interviews. That's going to suffice. The question then becomes, and what I was hoping that Baldwin was going to ask, is how long was the interview of Brad Holder? Okay. Did the investigator take notes? Where are those notes? Have you turned those notes over to the defense? You know, like all these questions are going to point to, when did he write his summary report? Was it the next day or was it 2 months down the road? If it was 2 months down the road and he didn't have notes, what did he use to refresh his recollection as to what was said? He obviously didn't have the video. How is he writing the report?
Yes.
So all those things then come out. Ultimately, Gull's going to say, I'm guessing, is going to say, look, you got the summary reports. You go interview Brad Holder. There's nothing stopping you from doing that.
It's not the same all these years later.
Exactly. And who knows? He has no obligation to talk to them.
No.
They're not law enforcement. You know, he could tell them to pound sand.
Well, and I'm sure in how many years now, if he needed to get an alibi of some sort, he could have figured that out pretty well at this point in time. A little different conversation all these years later.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing with Holder is, you know, a lot of the pushback with him is that he claims that he does have an alibi, that, you know, he had clocked into work that day and that he clocked out around 5. And, you know, we have no idea if that's true, but even assuming if that is true, what we don't know, we have no idea when the girls were actually killed.
Yeah.
Like people are just assuming that this happened as soon as they went down the hill. From what I've heard about the descriptions of the crime scene, the crime scene does not belie that fact. It does not demonstrate that that's where it happened, because it appears very much like they were not killed in that spot. They were brought there and staged there.
Yeah.
And so, which would mean that it would happen somewhere else. You know, we know that the medical examiner wasn't able to establish a time of death, which means it could have happened anytime from the girls go missing all the way up until the time that they're discovered.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning.
Yeah.
So we don't know what the time of death is. So him saying that he was work till 5 o'clock means nothing.
No.
What happens if the things took place at midnight, you know, under the full moon, you know, with howling wolves and guys wearing Viking hats?
Yeah.
Who knows? But you know what I'm saying? So like that's not an alibi to me when we don't know what the time of death is. Like an alibi only works when you know when somebody was killed, right? So
it's kind of just shocking that some of this can even take place. That a judge can be like, oh, okay, well, that works. That we can have no evidence. We can have all these pieces of evidence missing, all these interviews missing, and no notes on who was even, and be like, yeah, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, because look, I mean, at trial, that's when we're going to find out. When we're finally going to get our answers as to why the hell the Unified Command decided not to follow this thing. Now, if they can come up with, if their answer is, well, Brad Holder gave us an alibi, so he was off the list. Elvis Fields, you know, he's incredibly stupid and he's got the IQ of a 7-year-old, so he was off the list. He's not capable of this. Johnny Messer, he said that he wasn't in town. You know what I mean? If that's what their excuse
is. Like, that's the evidence he said?
Right. He said, and, you know, it's like, if that's what it is, the case has a real problem. And then, you know, you have to look at, when all we care about is justice for the girls, I'm like, did they blow it with respect to Richard Allen because they just didn't have enough evidence? And if he is the culprit, like that's the biggest nightmare. So right, the biggest nightmare would be if Richard Allen was actually the guy, and they end up, McClelland can't prove the case up because he just doesn't have enough evidence, or, you know, whatever approach he decides to make just isn't enough, and, you know, and he can't deal with this issue of having, you know, 4 or 5 other alternate suspects that seem as likely, if not more likely, to be the culprits. And then if Richard Allen was the guy and then he walks, like, can you imagine what a nightmare that would be? Like, oh my God, you know, but.
And all because of incompetent behavior and incompetent police work. I mean, that.
Right. And egos.
Yeah. And egos. That's really what so much of this is just coming down to. And oh my God.
Yeah. A lot.
Well, do you think we're going to see the trial date that has been set for this, or do you?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. I think Gull actually announces to the court that the jurors' questionnaires went out.
Okay.
So like this, like 600 jurors got their questionnaires in Allen County, and the jury's going to be picked up there. So they will go into Allen County, pick the jury back there, and then they'll be sequestered back in Carroll County. And I think this thing's going, man. Wheels are in motion, like beyond just lawyers talking about it. Now the county clerk's gotten involved. Now the jury questionnaires are out there. People are having to respond to them. They're getting sent back.
Flight attendants prepare for takeoff.
Yeah. I think it's going, man.
All right.
So.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.